This is an interview with Basil Johnston, recorded at the Royal Ontario Museum in Toronto on December 18th, 1990.
Not from an academic point of view, or, you know, from an approach, it's just simply what these stories reflect about belief.
Mm-hmm.
Perceptions, insights, outlooks, codes, ideals, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But no language programs, God, they're poor, dull, they're boring.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the teachers who go into the classrooms are dull and boring.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't speak any of the native languages myself.
Yeah.
We're looking into something at the Saskatchewan Indian Federated College, and I strongly advocate that to make it compulsory for any person employed there to learn one of the native languages, regardless of whether native or non-native. And of course, so what I do is I sort of skim the surface, and that what comes up, well, it's not the surface, but in written in English, that's what I have access to.
Well, the requirement, I think, should apply also to ethnologists and anthropologists. They should, anyone who attempts to work with any of the Aboriginal peoples should be required to take language and literature.
Mm-hmm.
And then their work will, you know, have substance. Right now they're just dealing with the physical aspects of life, you know, social organization, hunting and fishing, food preparation, dwellings, transportation, and clothing, and that's all.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get into the heart and soul and intellect of the people.
Oh, I think this is certainly true of sort of traditional ethnology. I'm very glad when I read the articles you sent me that you make this connection, say it's not just the language, it's the literature too. And
absolutely.
And I think it's vital to read that because it gives you a cultural self-expression.
Yeah. You can't separate the things. If you do, all you have left is grammar. And that doesn't teach you language.
No.
Anyway, this is what one of my apostolic missions.
Mm-hmm.
Whether anybody listens or not is something else.
No, but you put it down in writing, it's published, it's very...
But it's having some damn universities listen to their stuff. They've got their, you know, they're on their own kick, and it's hard, it's difficult for a non-accredited person to have his ideas accepted by those who have, you know, accreditation. Hell, you know,
you see,
we're not supposed to know as much as they do, and it's difficult.
It's also, I think, if you look in terms of English departments in Canada, some of them have a hard time even teaching mainstream Canadian literature, let alone native literature. And I was surprised, on previous visits, I also sort of do research in mainstream Canadian literature, and I read some papers at Lethbridge and other places, and people said, it's nice you tell us something about our literature, because they're still hooked on England very often. And I think, so if somebody comes from the outside and says, okay, over in Europe, in Italy, in Germany, or so, we do research into native literature, as scholars of literature, North American literature, maybe, hopefully, it reflects positively on the situation of native literature here, too. Because then I talked to some people in the English department at U of R, and they said, oh, yeah, this is interesting, but they didn't know.
Really, it it really hasn't been done yet. Any good text or manuscript on a native literature. A lot of it has been passed off as kids' stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then there, you know, there is another problem, of course, is trying to convince publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And publishers are not really resistant to publishing native stuff. It's got to be marketed.
Yeah, sure.
This text
mm-hmm.
has to pay for itself.
Mm-hmm.
I've been darn lucky with Ojibwe heritage
oh, yeah.
and Ojibwe ceremonies and Indian schoolings and Moose Meat Wild Rice, those things have been on the market
mm-hmm.
continuously
yeah.
since 76. Not spectacular, but they're there.
They're there and people
yeah.
have access, yeah.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing that is needed to, for me at least,
mm-hmm.
presumptuous
mm-hmm.
to think that these books are necessary for writers mm-hmm. to have something to start with
mm-hmm.
when they start writing plays. No,
mm-hmm.
Thompson Highway.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting, but it needs more.
Mm-hmm.
More needs to be done. We need epic poetry.
Mm-hmm.
We need operas. We know. We need novels. We need novellas.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things, you know, music,
mm-hmm.
Prayers and chants,
mm-hmm.
psalms, all these things, and there's a hell of a lot of material there right now. You know,
mm-hmm.
needs
yeah.
for native people to come along and start writing this
mm-hmm.
from their perspective.
I think this is coming along, though. I mean, in the U.S. it's been on the agenda longer, but in Canada it's coming along. If you think of the novels that have come out in the last 2 or 3 years, not very many, but some. And you mentioned drama, and Canada has used native art, native literature, native painting, carving, to sort of represent Canada culturally abroad. If you go to the Canadian Embassy, there is a totem pole, something
mm-hmm.
near and bond. Those things, so in a way, Canada has been using native imagery to present herself abroad.
Yeah.
And also in the field of drama. If you think George Kenney, George Kenney's October Stranger represented Canada in, I think, 78 in Monaco. Then at the Edinburgh Festival, it was Thompson Highway, and there's a third writer from BC, I forgot his name, who just also had his play, I think, in Brussels.
Mm.
So on the one hand, say, mainstream culture says, okay, it's here, and they advertise it. But here, the English departments or the literature departments are not generally addressing the issue. And I would like
yeah.
to take the Canadian public to task or whatever and say, hey, if you do this, you should give an acknowledgement to these writers here.
Yeah. You see, it's like libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Department. They're like Indians and Canadians. You have to have a reserve for Indians.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a special place for Indian books
mm-hmm.
and Indian authors in a library. They don't belong in Canadian literature. You know, they don't belong with Leacock. They don't belong with Pierre Burton.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, you've got to put them aside, you know. Indians.
yeah, yeah. So how do you
yeah.
feel about that?
Well, I'm just telling you what.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
So we've been set aside. All these things are Indian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what has prevented, I think, a greater readership of native written books is that anthropologists have inadvertently have been massacring Indian life by depicting only the physical. Social organization, hunting
mm-hmm.
and fishing, food preparation, dwellings, clothing, transportation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of kids, people look at that, oh God, not that stuff again.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing you run up against.
Mm-hmm.
Or another way, God, you know, I don't blame readers
mm-hmm.
from being discouraged from opening this volume.
You know, in one of the papers you sent me, you used you drew attention to the Five Nations Great Law of Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that in a different context too, and if you take that alone, if you think of the founding of the US, if you think of Marxism, if you think of contemporary feminism, they all look at that document and say, oh, this is so wonderful, they use it as a model, but there's a displacement at the same time of really of the origin of the Six Nations people, Five Nations, as the people who have an ongoing tradition, who are still there,
mm-hmm.
who still have the big council fire in Onondaga and the Sachems, although they have various structures and there are lots of problems, but it's being displaced, and I was very happy that you used that example, and there are many, many more where Europe, Europeans, the world have taken native concepts and used them, not only on the material level, but I think also on the philosophical level, without even knowing that this was native in origin, and I think that research has to unearth that too and give acknowledgement.
Well, I think that's really, you know, has to be given practical application, not merely philosophical recognition,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this thing is it. But
mm-hmm.
You take, for example, this phrase, oh, close to nature, you know.
It's
just a phrase. It doesn't mean a damn thing. And then they have a tremendous respect for and a reverence for the land. Now, when we speak about land, these
mm-hmm.
Natives generally include the other inhabitants,
mm-hmm.
animals and
mm-hmm.
birds, insects, fish. They talk about the land, they also talk about the lakes,
mm-hmm.
and the rivers and the streams and the bogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the mountains, all the landforms. And they also include the weather,
mm-hmm.
the seasons, the storms, all the effects here,
mm-hmm.
and it's and the moons. And the land, what does it do? It nourishes humankind. What nourishes you deserves respect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it goes beyond that. The earth is also a teacher. Everything that goes on in human life goes on and is reflected in human nature by the other inhabitants. You see fights.
Mm-hmm.
You see generosity. You see parenthood. You see kindness. You see selfishness. The seagull is the great symbol of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
You fight and you squawk.
Mm-hmm.
So you see all these things. Life, death, a law, a kind of a harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not good. A man is no greater than these creatures. He is a co-inhabitant.
Mm-hmm.
He has his place. Those other
mm-hmm.
creatures have
mm-hmm.
their place.
Mm-hmm.
It's also an aesthetic source. If that's the right
mm-hmm.
word or
mm-hmm.
not. But you know, if you appreciate the beauty of a valley,
mm-hmm.
sunrise, moonset, the formation of clouds,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, is tremendously fulfilling, satisfying, gratifying, to be able to grasp this thing, and then to hear the sounds, and to that's also the sound of birds.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They really don't. Are not called songs. Birds
mm-hmm.
really don't sing.
Mm-hmm.
They. I don't know what the hell they do. Some of them whistle. You know. But you get all of that at night, and then you know. This is when some of them become very philosophical. And they see some event, and then they try to connect that particular event with some other event. Cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
Because they start, you know, getting philosophical about this whole business. What is the connection between that and the weather?
Mm-hmm.
And what is the connection between that weather and human conduct?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why the Mayans came up with this.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to correlate human conduct and the anger and the
mm-hmm.
benefit, you know, of the gods,
yeah,
the manitudes.
Yeah.
And you...
That's
you
the same in pre-Christian mythology in the north of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
If there's thunder and Thor is on his way in his little wagon,
yeah.
He makes the rolling thunder, there's a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's fighting, maybe he's angry.
Yeah.
And it's in a lot of religions, I think, but
mm-hmm.
not in Christianity, where it's lost, I think.
Yeah. But at least, you know, I guess,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is the
and
the
what
origin
you said, the linear thinking and the cause and effect thinking,
yeah.
That's very, very European. And,
yeah.
and to think in, like you said, the land in terms of everything, not just the physical environment, but also that part that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
That's native, and
yeah.
that, I think, and maybe other cultures have that too, and
yeah.
share. And the literature is one way of expressing
yeah.
that, I guess.
Yeah. There's been a, you know, I think it's been a tremendous contribution that the five, six nations made, at least the adoption of their
mm-hmm.
system of government by the U.S. system, you know,
mm-hmm.
other political, social systems. But there's also, you know, this this business of conservation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when it's going to get through to West Europeans that eventually our well-being is tied in, going to be tied in with the well-being of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta look after it. Right now there's too damn much of it. Who cares? And then there's also, I suspect, there's a conviction that a certainty that science will look after them. All they have to do is, you know, throw some pellets into the water to purify them.
But I think that certainty is gone. It's gone in Europe. The young people, much more than
yeah.
the older people, have realized it's gone.
Yeah.
We're on a road towards death unless we really turn
yeah.
and take other things into consideration. I think that realization is there, and parents very often get it from their children. They talk about that in school and say, I don't want to use these whatever, maybe it's just plastic bags.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the awareness that,
yeah.
that we can't go on that
yeah.
way. Or why are there more and more people not using their cars anymore but going by bike in
mm-hmm.
Europe? Very
mm-hmm.
much so, and I see it in Canada
too. There's
too
damn many cars
so
anyway.
That's true. yeah.
Well, you look at the streets
yeah.
around.
Yeah.
How many times that is multiplied throughout the world?
Yeah.
Madness.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is some of the substance that must be dealt with, must be set down and explained. This is what
mm-hmm.
I'm doing now.
I've got some questions sort of regarding on the literature that is being produced in Canada now, and also what you've written. You think of moose meat and wild rice. I would think that's fiction, short fiction. Maybe part of it probably depends on the stories you've heard or things you've experienced, but I would see that as probably short fiction.
No.
Other texts I would see as part of the oral tradition. And you can tell me I'm all wrong.
Yeah, let's go back to
this one, I guess, is autobiography, but then it's in All My Relations, which is short fiction.
Yeah.
So those are questions, and I have a problem there being a sort of Western scholar. I always think in terms of genre and realize it doesn't fit. And so I'm puzzling. This is why I'm asking people. If there's a need to classify, and if I want to write a survey, I can't go and say, okay, these are all the works of Professor Johnson, these are all the works of Janet Armstrong, these are all the works of Maria Campbell, and these are all the works of, and so on, go like that. But try to group them. I can group them historically or according to subject matter or so on. How would you go about it?
I don't even worry. Hey, I'm a writer. I don't know about classification. You know, it's a librarian that worries about classification.
Okay.
I just write that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't go out and say, hey, I'm going to write some fiction. I have an idea. There is a need. Let me go back.
Yeah, what made you write?
Well, you
sent that to me.
Yeah, I sent that to you.
But this is an interview.
Well, you're going to write the damn thing anyway.
I transcribed the interview, and you'll see a copy of it.
Yeah, well, I was hoping that you'd take what I had written down, which is much more accurate than what I would give in an interview. Anyway.
But that's no.
Is it? No, let's go back. The other thing about academics, they start quibbling about things.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, hey, okay, you want to quibble about it? I'm not going to quibble about it. We'll go to this thing. I was asked to start an Indian program in a museum, which I carried out by teaching in the galleries and going out to the communities. Realized that neither students or teachers were prepared to study or to listen to a presentation, because the books available to them were poor in quality and in content. I was asked to be a guest, simply to look at this display that was mounted by a group of grade 5-6 students. Churchill Avenue Public School in North York in 72, which they mounted after studying an Indian unit in depth for 6 weeks. It was a marvelous display. Over in one corner was this huge teepee. In front of the teepee was this young guy, young chief, who wearing a paper headdress, arms folded in the traditional manner of a Blackfoot chief.
Yeah.
And he had on his lapel a cardboard label bearing the words Blackfoot. So I went over to this little guy, because he was all by himself. So I greeted him with how, and he looked at me. I said, how again? Explained that it would be traditional Blackfoot greeting. So he said, how? Then I observed that he looked morose. How come he looked so sad, Chief? And he looked around to see that there are no teachers within the vicinity. And he explained, sir, I'm bored. How so, Chief? Because, sir, before we started this program, this unit on Indians, I always thought Indians were neat. Always wanted to be an Indian. But sir, after 6 weeks of studying teepees that my team and I selected from these six aspects. Mm-hmm. He said, is that all there is, sir? Mm-hmm. That's when I started to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't even thinking about categories. I simply thought,
sure,
there is a need for an Ojibwe heritage. After that was finished, there was a need for Ojibwe ceremonies. And that became fiction, simply because there was a fictional character in that damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on ceremonies and rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was moose meat, wild rice, because native people like humor, not subtle humor, like Canadians want, you know, the subtler the better, geez, the funnier it is for Canadians, you know. You say dry humor, and I still can't figure out what the hell is the opposite of the wet humor part.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and then I did some basic books in my own language.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and now there is a need for a text on literature. That is the reconstitution, the rewriting of some of the stories in yet language at a higher plane,
mm-hmm,
to convey the depth of the stories, the depth of understanding that is there, that has not yet been captured,
mm-hmm,
in the stories that have been written down, recorded, and transliterated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I'm working on, and.
Would that be Ojibwe story, sort of traditional?
Mishnabe. I use the term Mishnabe.
Okay. So it's of all people who share in that language family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the people call.
So it would be traditional things from the oral tradition, not sort of contemporary fiction, or would that be included too? Poetry.
Well, let's put it this way. There are stories that are universal,
mm-hmm,
and I think almost eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they were told 2, 10, 40,000 years ago, they still have application.
Mm-hmm.
However, some of these stories have to be redone in modern terms. And in one instance, I'm presuming right now, I'm
mm-hmm
presumptuous as hell, that this is going to be a terrific manuscript that some publisher is going to pick it up, you know, and conceited enough to think that that this is going
mm-hmm
to be so. Anyway, these stories have these lessons. And the lesson, even though the circumstances change, the lessons still remain the same. And in one case, I'm going to tell the story as it was told, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to have to modernize the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also generalize it. So the belief is that stories are supposed to be static. My belief, my approach
mm-hmm
is they're not static. Hell, you change the damn things,
no,
you bring them up to date.
You set up the book,
it's
a description of those stories and at the same time an exemplification of the ongoing vitality or so of stories because you create a new one?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's an interesting book. Because there's, you see, why I'm trying to put this book together is originally I planned to write a book on Native literature in Canada, just a survey, and then this book by Penny Petroni came out, and it covers at least some of the stuff that I would have covered. And if you write something on the same topic, you inevitably then end up saying disagreeing or so no or whatever. And I don't really want to get into that, and I think since mainstream English departments, at least some of them, start taking individual native texts and analyze them exactly in the way they analyze other literature too, very often.
Mm-hmm.
And I think very often the analysis may be very, very intelligent, but maybe not very meaningful in terms of native literature. Mm-hmm. And there is not much by native people on their own literature. There is literature by native people, but what you're writing now, I think that would be interesting, and I think this, to get people to sit down and write about their literature, a lot of people don't have the time, the resources to do that. And I thought, well, maybe putting together a book with about 20 interviews, and that's almost as many as I have now, of writers from various perspectives talking about the literature and put that together, that would give whoever wants that an opportunity to share what native people say about the literature they are producing. And that is maybe the objective of this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to finish it by the end of March before I go back to Germany. So when you say you're writing about storytelling, about the stories.
What I'm doing, I'm retelling, rewriting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These things.
Mm-hmm.
Hoping to give them their proper force.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them have been, you know, stripped of everything. You take a lot of those books that I've got up there. They're just the skeletons of stories. So what I'm doing here is not explaining,
mm-hmm.
but simply retelling the story. Now, if you tell a story properly, you don't have to explain what the hell the damn thing means after.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I'm putting this together. I hope it's, you know, the story tells itself. It's self-explanatory. If if you have to explain, then there's something wrong with that story or with the storytelling. But a lot of them are not immediately understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people can see it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Some people take years.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just give you one example. I was in Fort Francis 10, 12 years ago. At the request of professional teachers up there,
mm-hmm.
to address teachers on their PD day. And I told them that I would simply tell them stories and allow them to draw their own inferences as to the meaning. And that some of them would understand the stories right away, and some it would take a year, and some 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, after the presentation, I was having coffee in the coffee room with these 100 or so teachers, and the ones who felt they might not understand the story for 10 years were impatient. They wanted to understand it now.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me, would you tell me? I said, no. I want you to think about the story. Nevertheless, they insisted and persisted. And finally, there was this old, there was this lady, a teacher's aide, an Indian lady who may have had grade 8 and who had taken a couple of courses to be a teacher's aide, she was able to understand that story because she grew up with stories, and she knew, she went directly to the meaning of the story. It was a good thing, you know, she had not ever taken any literature courses where they study structure,
mm-hmm.
character, images, devices, all this damn nonsense. So she went directly to this.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who have had most influence on me are not academics.
No, no.
There's a guy by Jerry Kekik.
Mm-hmm.
The guy may have had grade five.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him to, I was taught him for one summer. And all my students had to write
mm-hmm.
an essay.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained Nanabush, guy grade five.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Sam Zolnick, an older gentleman. He understands stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the approach that I take in my writing. I'm not going to explain structure. I'm not going to explain conflict. What is the meaning? This is the thing that you have to try to get across in elegant language, which constitutes literature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if I can do that. At least I'm going to damn well try.
Mm-hmm.
So this is
mm-hmm.
what I'm doing.
I
don't know how many stories. I may do 15, 20 stories. I'm not going to write by the pound either.
No.
You know, 250 pages, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as long as it gives some other writer a start,
mm-hmm.
that's all you need to do.
Yeah.
You don't have to overwhelm him.
mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. In a way, that's very...
Also, you know... You were suggesting this is kind of an academic work. No. And I think one of the reasons why native writers at the present time don't write some text on literature from an academic point of view is that there's still... inspired is not the right word. They're still proceeding on the basis, hey, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind talking about
it. Yeah.
Do it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, never mind talking about writing.
Mm-hmm. Do it.
Write.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk about telling stories or all this nonsense. Hey, tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Write them. So this is what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is very much in line with what I heard from a lot of other writers. There are some attempts by native writers to sort of organize that. There's the school of native writing or international writing in the Malcolm Center. So people sort of, that's in BC, Pennsylvania, which is an all native operated school. And I think it goes many ways. Some people, well, you've been doing this kind of work for years and years. And,
since 72
or something.
Six, guess, uh-huh. Yeah.
And others have just started.
Mm-hmm.
There will be more and more. And the way I see it, if I look across the border, there's going to be a lot of literature by native people.
Yeah.
Part of it, stories, and also quite a few things that are fiction that are sort of set in this time. But still, they draw on the cultural background of the writers and their way of looking at the world.
There's also this, you know, we're talking about literature. There has been no book on philosophy written, no book on psychology. In order to write truly about the native insights,
mm-hmm.
you have to know the language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're only talking about English language writing. There's even something even prior to that,
mm-hmm.
even more fundamental. And one of the damn things that we can't get across here in Canada is to have books in our own language.
Yeah.
That is what is needed.
I like the point you were making somewhere where you say those books will have to be published by museums, by government-sponsored organizations, because they are not the kind of books that will have a large reading public. They won't be very profitable. But if that is to be preserved, and it must be preserved because otherwise it's such a terrible loss.
Well, I think I have to go outside for funding.
Mm-hmm.
I hope. Ask the Arabs, ask the Russians. Gee, they've been mm-hmm. doing this damn thing for years.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't. Maybe it's deliberate withholding funds. Maybe this country wants to be unilingual. Suppress
one thing
other.
Yeah. You mentioned that in another this example from the Sault Ste. Marie School.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about that in terms of our college and attempts to implement a policy saying anybody teaching there learn one native language. And it should be easy, I thought, as an outsider in Canada, where you have an official policy that protects two languages, and they are both European languages,
yeah.
and the real languages that are here, mm-hmm. and the three that are surviving in Inuktitut and Cree and Ojibwe or Anishinaabe,
mm-hmm.
But there are so many others, some of them dead already, and some of them are just, a colleague of mine, a linguist, is just writing word lists of some Salish various dialects
that are dying.
And it should be, one should be able to get funding. If people who are employed by the government get time off and money paid
mm-hmm.
for French immersion,
mm-hmm.
why shouldn't people get money and be paid for Cree or Ojibwe or whatever immersion?
I have a manuscript right here. It's all in my language. Oh, nah. I was going to publish it.
Yeah.
And, you know, a few other things.
Is it said in the Roman alphabet?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, who's going to publish it? Will it be a trial?
I haven't gone out yet.
Oh.
But I do know that they'll say there is no market for it.
No, sure. Would you write down those two names?
Oh, they really don't mean anything.
No, but if I use that section, I would like to use that section, then I would like to know how to write the name and not garble it up. You know, from the... Okay. After having read all that, I sat down and thought about that a little, and I took some notes, and I should go through them. Well, there mm-hmm. were certain things that I wrote down. I took quite a few notes from what you sent me, but some stuff. One is the question of language and cultural identity, and the ones who say those no longer speaking the language of their forebears cannot know themselves. And this may be a very hard judgment on people, native people who don't speak the language anymore. Personally, I agree with you. If people come up to me in Canada and say, "Hi, oh, you're German? I'm German too," then immediately I say, "Ja, wo kommst du denn her?" And if they then don't understand and can't tell me where they're from, to me they're not German. They're German Canadians, perhaps.
Yeah.
But I this may be okay in the case of Europeans. But what about native people in Canada? Who've lost, who maybe grew up in an urban environment, it is thrown into their face all the time that they are native, if they're looking for a place to stay or whatever. I mean, there is the racism, and there's much more maybe out west, I don't know. So there's no way denying that they are native, but they don't speak the language anymore. Mm-hmm. Where are they? Caught in midair?
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't say they're native? And maybe even say they're not a Anishinaabe if they don't speak Anishinaabe.
Well, they've lost, I think, that sense, that feeling. They cannot articulate anymore those insights that are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sent you an article with some terms.
Yes, and the
if you can't
mm-hmm.
you can't
mm-hmm.
Articulate those things, you can't live by those principles unless you know what they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you have to. You all you have to do. You'll just have to simply adopt West European values,
mm-hmm.
principles, everything. Once you've lost
that's
that,
another language,
you
yeah.
see. The other thing is, you don't have to lose it. You can regain it. Now, what's to prevent a person from regaining that language?